Hello, my beautiful beanies, and welcome to The Bean for Wednesday. First with yesterday's news, I am Glenn ZB. We're looking back at Tuesday. Changes to rules around Airbnb, certainly around the Queenstown area. We'll cover this off shortly. Andrew Dickens standing in for Rachel this week while she recovers from her New York Marathon experience. He talks about emergency responders. Kerry and Mark get offered drugs, and Marcus gets offered some rabbit advice. But before any of that, is extending parental leave, paid parental leave that is that a good idea? Here's Leighton on that.
With the longer maternal leave, or parental leave, if you want, it is even less likely, in my humble opinion, that they will return. There is a longer to enjoy the period and to get used to it and say, I like this, I don't want to go back. And so the employer is thrown out. It is, I suppose, incumbent on the taxpayer to front foot this. We have no choice. And so you have people who will take that break and then not go back, but they got their leave in the first place when they had no intention of going back. And so is that a form of cheating? Is that a form of robbing the taxpayer? Not the government, the taxpayer. I'm not a great in favour person of paid parental leave. I'm a very big believer in people being responsible for themselves. Now, I'm in an ever-shrinking minority, and I recognise it. When you've got even Stephen Joyce saying everybody approves it, or just about everybody does now, I think, geez, maybe I better catch up. But it's a matter of principle. It's a matter of principle. Now, you can use all sorts of arguments as to why it should happen, why it should be in place, but there will be a move at some stage down the track to make it 52 weeks, a whole year. It's coming. And it will cost the country, it will cost the taxpayer, etc.
Of course, you know what I have to say about this? Ban kids. We have a complete ban on children, all these problems go away. End of argument. Now, it also means it will cost you less when you go on holiday because you won't have to take any children with you. One way to save money, of course, is Airbnb. It might be harder if you're going around the Queenstown area.
Why are Airbnbs becoming a problem for the city?
Well, look, it's a double-edged sword for us because they do provide worthwhile accommodation, a lot of accommodation for visitors, but we are now to the situation where 14% of the houses in our district are listed on either Airbnb or Bookabatch or one of the similar sites. National average is 1.2%, so this is becoming a major. And while that in itself might not seem too much of a problem, if you're living in a residential area and you've effectively got a bus pulling up outside your house, disgorging six people at this house, five people at another house, effectively you've got a mobile hotel outside your property every night.
Right, and there's parties and all that sort of stuff, and they're not subject to the same regulations as the accommodation sector like motels and hotels and so on and so forth, right?
No, correct. And I mean, of course, hotels and motels are in the correctly zoned visitor accommodation areas. But look, we're not trying to stop this. We're trying to give people the option when they go on holiday to put their house on Airbnb or whatever they want to do with it, 28 days a year. So that covers what most people's holidays would be. We're also allowing people, not interfering with the ability to rent out your back bedroom or your little flat attached to your house, etc. This is just about whole houses being made available as effectively hotel rooms.
I like the verb disgorging. Jim Bolt, that's the mayor of the Queenstown Lakes region. That makes it sound really bad. If a bus starts disgorging people outside your house, that's very scary. Great vocab there, Jim. Now, Andrew Dickens wants to use a bit of vocab to say thanks to emergency responders in this country.
There are a number of rescue helicopter trusts in New Zealand. Four of them sponsored by Westpac. The helicopters have numerous financial supporters in the community and corporate sectors. They are only partially government funded. Each trust has to find hundreds of thousands of dollars and sometimes millions from fundraising. Sometimes you wonder whether if the pressure to fundraise was taken off them, how much more good they could do in our community. So I was reminded of the story in the weekend about our surf lifesavers. They too save lives, and they too receive limited funding from the government. They're staffed by volunteers, and they do a wonderful job. But that job has got bigger and bigger. They don't just patrol between the flags. They also mount search and rescue missions in coastal areas. They aid people who crash their vehicles on our beaches. They revive those people who have had a heart attack on the beach. With our swelling population, they're being called on more and more, and they're starting to crack. And in fact, some surf lifesavers are starting to suggest they may have to close some New Zealand beaches because they don't have the ability to patrol them. They've started a conversation about increased central government funding, and I think they have a case. There is a lot of emergency response in this country that relies on volunteers. At some point, we may have to concede that the services have got beyond charities and volunteers.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just emergency services, but anything that basically keeps the citizens of your country from dying and not being citizens of your country anymore probably deserves a little bit of government support. I might be taking too rudimentary a view of that. I've got to think through the ramifications of what I've just said there. It sounds like on the surface of it, it makes sense, but most of the stuff I say ends up not making sense when you really drill down on it. It's not that I'm on drugs or anything.
Well, I can't believe that it took me until this year to be offered some meth.
You offered meth.
I got offered meth. I was walking down through to.
Oh, that's
look,
awesome.
I've hung out with all sorts of people, especially overseas and at festivals. There's people around doing all sorts of things, but never once has anyone ever offered me any meth. And
a credit to you.
If there was a time then, and I was thinking why, because I've been offered everything else under the sun pretty much at some point somewhere, but never any meth. And given how much meth there is in this country and how many people are using it, it always shocked me that it never happened. And then I was walking through Queen Street earlier this year, and this guy said to me, "Nice tattoo." And I was like, "Sorry, I missed what he said." I was like, "Sorry." He said, "Are you up?" I said, "Up what?" And he said, "Hi." I said, "No, it's Tuesday. I've got work tomorrow." He's like, "Oh, would you like to be up?" I said, "No, I'm all right, man." And then he kind of walked away. And then I was like, "Oh, actually, I want to know how much this would cost." And so I went up and asked him. And he's like, "No, don't worry about it. And he wouldn't talk to me. But I was just interested to find out how much it would have cost on the street.
I think I've never been offered. I've been offered cocaine once, ages and ages ago, but I think people look at me and think, she's such a pig with food, with the dance floor, with the drink. If we put her on the drugs, nobody's going to get a look in.
I do wonder if perhaps people just assume that Mark was already on meth, so he didn't need it. That's Glenn, Glenn ZB, pull your head in. Stop saying those things just for an easy, cheap laugh. Let's talk about rabbits and eating them?
Talking rabbits and whether rabbits provide a good meat. I heard they weren't a great meat. So a mate of mine told me that. Jason Marcus, good evening.
G'day, Marcus. Now, the issue with rabbits is they've got no fat, which means if you eat them constantly, you end up getting rabbit starvation, which is what the pioneers on the American prairies got when all they ate was rabbits. Any animal that jumps has got no fat, so kangaroo is the same. So they're very good eating. You've got to flavour them. But if you eat them constantly, you've got a deficit of fats.
And that's important for your brain, is that right?
Oh, shit, yeah.
Shivers, yes. Absolutely.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So when you've got, what do you call it, fat starvation?
Rabbit starvation.
Really?
Yeah. Because you will get the nutrition, but you don't get the fats, and as such, you end up having the effects of starvation. Just on another point.
So what is rabbit starvation? How does that manifest itself?
I don't know, my brother. I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
But I'll just tell you
do you think someone else will know? Because I'm fascinated by this.
I do hope so. Tell you something else, though. When they sell rabbits in Great Britain, traditionally they would leave some of the excrement at the bottom of the carcass just to indicate that it was a rabbit and not a cat.
Okay. This tinned rabbit, is it?
No. This is when you buy a fresh rabbit from the butcher. Just leave one tiny pellet down at the bottom, because a rabbit's carcass and a cat's carcass look very, very similar.
So, Jason, there, with some interesting facts, but not all the facts. It was unusual, wasn't it? Because he seemed to know so much about rabbits, but not everything about... Like, you can't just bring up the subject of rabbit starvation, which none of us have ever heard of before, and then not give us any more details, can you? That seems... It's like he's teasing us with those facts. Do a bit more research on that, please, Jason, and get back to Marcus. I'm keen to hear more. I am Glenn ZB. If you're keen to hear more of this podcast, News Talk ZB, come back tomorrow. It'll be here then. Of course, you could just go back to the previous 1,662 episodes and listen to those as well.